back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Our Labor Day show, that was Randy Newman and Mr. President, Have Pity on the Working Man. I want to welcome in our first guest. It wouldn't be a Labor Day show if we didn't talk to MSU Professor of Economics, Charlie Ballard. Hello, Charlie. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Jack. How are you?
Well, just fine. We could talk about the political campaign, but I want to talk about the perception of organized labor. And it seems now that a lot of the problems facing this country are being tagged to organized labor. And I wonder if you think that's a fair assessment.
I hear what you're saying. And I think there are those in parts of the political spectrum who would like to blame everything on labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that labor unions are much weaker than they were decades ago. You know, the peak of the labor movement in the United States was in the early 1950s, and about one out of every three workers was a member of a union.
Right.
Now it's down to about one out of every eight.
Mm-hmm.
So dramatically reduced. And we've seen that even where unions are still very much in place, harsh economic realities have in many cases forced them to moderate their negotiating stances. You know, the UAW gave back a great deal in 2007.
Yes.
So, you know, this notion that labor unions are the source of all of our problems is a little bit weird, since they're so much smaller than they used to be.
Well, if one out of eight people can mess up the entire country, I guess maybe they're a little bit more powerful than I thought. But in terms of what labor unions had bargained for, I guess in terms of what I always thought in economic negotiations, if you give up something to get something, then you probably shouldn't have to give that away.
Well, there's been an awful lot of give something and then give the next thing. And that's been really all across the country. We've seen a lot of that right here in Michigan. You know, this is part of a broader phenomenon that's been really going on for about 35 years, since the 70s. We've had productivity increases during that time. The economy is a lot bigger than it was. But the average worker hasn't seen much of that in his or her paycheck. The average household, the median household's income adjusted for inflation is a little bit higher than it was nationally. But when you consider that 35 years ago, in many cases, that median household had one earner, and now in many cases they have two,
right.
There really hasn't been much progress. The incomes at the top of the scale have been just fabulous. I mean, this is historically unprecedented. You know, last year the top hedge fund manager made $4 billion. That's $4 billion with a B. That's one guy.
Mm-hmm.
The top 100th of 1% has done amazingly well, and then the upper middle class have done pretty well. Doctors and lawyers may not be millionaires or billionaires, but and let's be honest, university professors in many cases doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists and engineers. But then,
where do you draw that line, Charlie? Because I guess I assume that doctors and lawyers would not be upper middle class in many cases.
Well, I mean, a lot of this is semantic.
Yeah.
Would in some cases pretty upper class?
Yeah.
And I don't know. There isn't an official definition of what causes somebody to be upper middle class and what causes somebody to be in the upper crust.
Right.
But the upper crust has done amazingly well, and then the next 10 or 20% of the income distribution has done quite well.
Mm-hmm.
But the average folks, not so well. And then down at the bottom, it's really been very, very tough. The social safety net has been frayed in many cases. It's the people with the least skills, of course, who are most likely to be unemployed.
Right.
And so this economic downturn that we've had the last couple of years has been especially harsh for those who don't have a high school diploma. And even those who do have a high school, if you don't have some college, it's been tough. Those unemployment rates are lowest for those with a bachelor's degree or more. They're substantially higher for those who have a high school diploma, and they're higher yet for high school dropouts.
Charlie Ballard, MSU professor of economics and our economic advisor on this show, our guest, Labor Day edition of Ebling and You. Charlie, in light of what you said, why so much resentment toward those who are struggling to make ends meet? I would think that the masses would rise up and revolt against those hedge fund managers.
You know, that is, I think that's one of the most enduring puzzles of the last time. You see the average citizen losing ground, or at least not making up much ground, and yet there's hostility to all sorts of policies that might help. I think it's partly because certain groups have been very successful in changing the subject. Changing the subject to worrying about Muslims and gays and lesbians and all sorts of other issues which don't have a bearing on the economic mm-hmm. issues. And well, I guess I'm revealing my prejudice here. I think that those bread and butter, those pocketbook issues are really important.
Right.
So I think there's been all sorts of distraction. But I think it's also fair to say that the right wing of the political spectrum has been incredibly motivated and highly energized, very focused, very on message, very well financed. Whereas the labor movement and various other groups that may or may not be labor, but that are sort of more on the progressive or the left side of the political spectrum, have been back on their heels and mm-hmm. have been not, in many cases, able to press an advantage.
Someone gave me an analogy a couple of weeks ago with this, Charlie, and I want to see if this makes any sense to you. I said, imagine two chairs at a table for a five-star gourmet meal, and one of the chairs is empty. And now you've got a pit next to it, and you've got three people down at the bottom of this pit, and instead of helping each other climb out of it, they keep pulling each other back down because they want to be the one to get out first and get that other chair instead of getting everyone out and then throwing the guy who's been sitting at the chair back in the pit.
Well, you know, I had not heard that particular version of that metaphor before, but I've heard things sort of like that. I think that's fairly apt. You know, I talked about distraction. And certainly in America, race is the number one distraction.
Yes.
And working class, sort of upper class whites have, for most of American history, been able to manipulate working class whites on the basis of racial fears. I think that is, it's often not spoken anymore. You know, we don't have people using the N-word out loud very much,
right.
But I think it's under the surface, not very far, and in a lot of cases, there's a lot of feeling on the part of working class whites of an anxiety, and then they see an African American president, and in many cases, certainly not in all, and I'm not trying to paint a broad brush, but in many cases, those fears have been exploited, I think, very very skillfully by those who want to tear down some of the social safety net, mm-hmm. whose main concern is with lining the pockets of the top folks. By the way, you know, I mentioned the hedge fund managers. They get taxed at the same rate as a middle class folks.
Yeah.
They get a special deal where they get a 15% rate instead of a 35%.
Hmm. Well, I was looking at some historical statistics about the top tax rates, and going back into World War II, it was 90%, and then it was in the 80 percentile range during the Eisenhower years. It was 70% with Ronald Reagan.
That's right. When Reagan took office, the top rate was 70%, and it was reduced to 50. When John Kennedy took office, it was 91%, and Kennedy got it reduced to 70%. Mm-hmm. What's one thing that I find amusing and ironic is that the rhetoric of the Reagan tax cuts and the Kennedy tax cuts is somewhat different, but the actual policies were almost identical in terms of cutting the top tax rate. Now, you don't find many folks arguing that we should go back to top rates of 91%.
Right.
On the other hand, we are now at substantially lower than we used to have, and substantially lower than in much of Western Europe and a lot of other countries in the world.
Right. But at 39% or whatever, instead of 35%, there was a surplus at the end of the Clinton administration, correct?
That's right. You know, what we saw during the Clinton administration was some real discipline on spending, and that's never easy. And then we had some modest tax increases. And with giving a little bit on each side, we were able to close the government budget deficit and have a surplus. The 4 years of Clinton's second term were the only 4 years in the last 40 when the federal government has balanced its budget. And now, of course, the budget is way out of whack.
Right.
And that's really a major concern going down the road. If it were up to me, I honestly would have to have some spending reductions, but I don't see how we can do it effectively without looking at the revenue side as well.
Right.
And since the ability to pay taxes is so heavily concentrated in the upper income groups, those are the folks who I'd like to see step up to the plate and pay more.
Well, you've advocated the graduated income tax, and a lot of people think that makes a lot of sense. Charlie Ballard, MSU economics professor, our guest on this Labor Day 2010. Charlie, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jack. Good to talk to you.
We'll be right back. We're going to talk with Brian Fredline of UAW Local 602 up next on Ebling & U, 1320 WILS.